You're listening to Thrive, where every week we have meaningful conversations with incredible women like you, packed with practical tips and sisterly advice to bring you from a life of simply surviving to thriving. We're shaking the story that you're just getting by and stepping into who God made you to be. Because it's not enough to simply survive, you deserve to thrive. I'm your host, Erica Gwynn, and I'm ready to thrive together. Here's today's episode. Welcome to what just might be one of my favorite conversations on Thrive to date with one of my new favorite people. Stephanie Mae Wilson is an author, speaker, and popular podcaster, and she just debuted her new book, Create a Life You Love, all about quieting outside voices so you can finally hear your own. If it feels like your 20s or 30s, or both, are one big pressure cooker, you're not alone. Research has shown that 80% of our life's most defining moments happen before our 35th birthday. It's no wonder we're all stressed every family gathering when grandma inevitably asks when she can expect grandbabies. But Steph's point isn't to pass you some random roadmap to do cool things like she's done, like having twin girls or moving her family internationally or giving a TED Talk, but rather to figure out what's right and best for you. This episode is so full of goodness and realness, you'll want to listen and re-listen and share with a girlfriend who could use it too. Without further ado, welcome Stephanie. Stephanie Mae. Hey, girl.
Hi. I am so, so glad to get to connect with you. This is so fun.
I'm so happy we met. And we met on the good old Instagram, of all places, through our mutual wonderful friend that we were also just talking about for a hot minute. It's just so good to connect with like-minded people like you, and you're awesome. So I'm so thrilled, A, to meet you, and B, that your book is coming out any minute now. It'll already be out by the time this episode airs, which is great news for everybody listening in, because you can just head on over to ye ol' Amazon and add to cart. But for our friends listening who have not yet had the good grace of knowing you, meeting you, all that jazz, tell us who you are and what you do and what you just did in this fabulous, beautiful book that is on shelves now at the time of everybody listening.
It is so wild. So as we're recording this, we're like 3 days out or something. And so it is like so comforting to me to know that like, it just is, it will happen. It will. As you guys listen to this, my blood pressure will be slightly lower than it is right now. So I'm Stephanie Mae Wilson. And I am an author, a podcaster, and a speaker. And my mission in life really is to just be who I needed when I was younger. I am on a mission to help women through some of the biggest decisions and transitions that we all go through, particularly in our kind of late 20s, 30s timeframe. And you know, through my books and my podcasts and my online courses, I try to help women take the pressure off of what they think their life is supposed to look like by now. Always it's by now, and figure out what they actually want in life and then actually take steps to get it. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. I am married to a great guy named Carl. We are about to celebrate our 10-year wedding anniversary, which is wild. I feel like we got married yesterday. And then I am mom to 3.5-year-old twin girls, Annie and Quinn, and our life is wild. It's wild, especially right now. We are, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but we are actually in just about 3 months gearing up to move our family to Spain. So to say that a lot is happening right now is an understatement, but it's very fun to be, you know, sending this book out into the world right now, because the life that we're living right now and the pivots that we're making are such a reflection of us doing the things that I talk about in Create a Life You Love. We're like really actively in the thick of it. So anyone else who's like in the thick of it, making big decisions or making big changes in their lives, I'm like, I'm with you, sending you a hug, because it's a lot, but it's really, really good.
What I love so much though, too, that I want to immediately call out is I feel like you do this so well in the book, where you point out that it is not about teaching people how to do what you do, or like saying, look at the life that I'm living. Look at all of these cool things. You just did a TED Talk, girl, like pat yourself on the back for that. You have all the books, all the
all the things are checked off all of your boxes, but you're not saying, here's how to do what I do. Your focus and intention comes out so clearly, I think, in my very unbiased opinion, that you're trying to help everyone figure out what their thing is, and that it very much does not have to look like, nor should it look like yours as this sort of copy and paste. I'm going to help you also move across an ocean and get married and have the babies and do the books and the TED Talks and all the things. Although that is all awesome. You're very clear on like, but if that's not your calling and what you're trying to do and what lights your heart on fire, that is A-okay. And we're going to find what your thing is. So it's very like, that is the framework and the heart of it. I feel like, am I like,
does that yes, feel? Totally. Like, and yes. I'm so glad that you said that, because I think that that's one of the big, like, I say that in the very beginning of the book. I'm like, listen, I promise, number one, that this is a safe space. That is my goal always, is to create a safe space, because making the biggest decisions of our lives, making small decisions, making any decisions, being a human, specifically being a woman, is hard. It's hard. And so this is a safe place to be wherever you are, whoever you need to be, whatever spot you're in the journey, like as messy as you are, as put together as you are on some days and messy on the other days, like this is, you are safe here. And then the second promise that I make is that I don't care what you decide to do with your life. Like truly, I love the position I get to take, because I'm not your mom. I didn't help pay for your college degree. Like my grandkids don't rest uncomfortably on your reproductive system. Like I am not affected by your life decisions at all. And so I don't have a horse in the race. I don't care what you decide to do, but I do care about you. And I care that you decide that things aren't decided for you or decided sort of accidentally, or that you end up sort of slipping into a life you never planned because you didn't realize that these decisions were happening like right now. Thank you for calling that out. That's absolutely my heart for the book, is I'm not here to help you build a life like mine. I'm here to help you build a life that looks like you.
Yeah. It's so good. I also love how you called out, you know, the pressure that we all feel in this everything era that you call it, which is wildly accurate, because man, what a pressure cooker this decade-ish feels like, where literally every big significant life decision that could possibly be made, it's like, here, give this. Like you could have just had your first sip of wine, and why don't you also decide what you want to do for the rest of your life and also your life partner? And let's also consider whether or not you want to have kids. Like, let's just throw it all at the same time.
Got to figure out your career. Oh, TikTok, baby. It's time to go.
TikTok. Like, it's like all happening right now. Ready, go. Like, yes. I feel anxious even just listing it all out loud, let alone living it in life. But I did not know this statistic that you put in your book. And I read it and I was like, wow, this makes so much sense for all of us. We can kind of breathe a sigh that 80% of our life's most defining moments happen before our 35th birthday.
Yep.
That's like, so the sigh is not for the statistic itself, because that's actually kind of yikes. The sigh is like, we're all in this together and you're not alone. So if you are sitting there being like, ooh, why does it feel so hard? And why does it feel like I have all of this pressure on me to do this? It's like, girl, it's all of us. We all of it. It's all of it.
It's all of us. And like, yeah, that statistic just absolutely blew my mind. And I was like, there's no, wait, what? Like, how is that true? And so
who
I started
made that
looking
decision
into it. Yeah. Like, and really the study was a handful of years ago. And so I like to say 35 ish, like, but I like to put ishes around all of the ages, because it really is different for all of us. Like some of us graduate college and have this immediate pressure to have baby or like get married and have babies. Like that is, that wasn't my community. Like that wasn't the pressure that was on me, but it is very real for some people. And so you get to 25 and you feel ancient. If you haven't gotten married and had kids, you feel like you're so far behind. Whereas other people, they don't start to feel that pressure until later. So it does like depend. But statistically, when you look at like some of the really big decisions that we make in our lives about, you know, who we're going to spend our lives with, where we're going to live, what we want to do for a career, you know, if we want to have kids and when and how many and the timing of it all, like those things really are concentrated statistically in between about 25 and 35. And so even if you're not making those decisions during that time, even if your timing doesn't line up with that, it doesn't mean the pressure isn't there to be making those decisions during that time. And that might even be worse.
Yeah, for sure. So for yourself, since we're not comparing life trajectory to your life trajectory and the actual decisions themselves, how do you think you got to the feelings place? Personally, like not the place of being married with the two kids and the book and podcast, multiple books and podcast and move, but feeling like you were able to make decisions like that with a sense of confidence, if the confidence was there, or like with a place of clarity from a place of like, okay, now I can make this decision and I know how big of a decision it is and I am making it. Hit send.
Yep. Well, so I'm so glad I got to write this book because this is a book that I've needed like desperately for my whole life. I am a firstborn type A people pleaser, rule follower with anxiety. Like I have,
oh my God, we're the same.
all of the things. And so I spent so much of my life feeling like other people had the right answers to like what this is supposed to look like. And somehow they just knew more than me. I had a really hard time like hearing my own voice and trusting my own decision-making abilities. And so I spent so much time looking to my right and left, not comparing as much like, is she better than me? But more like, I mean, there was definitely a lot of that, but more like, am I doing this right? Like, is this how this is supposed to go? Like, I just wanted to make sure I was doing it right. Cause these things that we're trying to do are so important. We don't want to mess them up. And I just didn't trust that I'd be able to do them on my own. There were a few problems with that though. The more that I looked kind of to my right and my left, some of the people I was looking at had no idea what they were doing. And I didn't know that. Like I just assumed everybody else knew. I didn't realize that the people I was asking for marriage advice had a like truly toxic marriage. And that's not the case for everybody, but like they're like, that is a very real thing that I did. Like, hey, how do we do this? Like, can you shepherd us through this without really checking to see if they knew any more than I did? Some people were doing fine and had, you know, good advice to give, but the direction, the like destination they were walking towards wasn't the destination I wanted to get to. Like, they're like, this is how you do your career. This is the next step you take. This is whatever. But they're trying to be a doctor. And like, I would be the worst doctor. Like, I could never be a doctor. And our career trajectories are so different. They're giving me advice to like how to play the game that they're trying to win. But I don't want to win that game. Also, could not. So that was tricky too, is like, okay, shoot, if I follow the directions or follow one of these people, I'm going to end up someplace I don't want to be. And then also a lot of people's advice conflicted. And so it'd be like, you should be doing this. Well, you should be doing this. And like that came up so much as I became a mom. Everyone gave you different advice for like, if you do this, you're going to mess up your baby. But if you do that, you're going to mess up your baby. Like you're just going to mess them up.
We're all going to mess up the babies. Yeah.
It's just what I took away from it. So like nobody had the right answer. And so I was swirling. And I remember this one moment specifically. It was when I was trying to figure out if my husband was the one. And I knew that I was in love. I knew that he was special. I had dated. I like had, you know, been in different relationships. I'd gotten to know myself really well. Like I was in a good place to make this choice, but I didn't know that, like, I didn't trust myself to make such a big decision. And so I'm trying to figure out like, well, how did you know? And well, what do you know about this? And I'm reading all these books and I'm like, you know, just overwhelmed. And finally a friend takes me by the shoulders and she says, Steph, you get to decide. You get to decide. And that was the very first day I knew that I was allowed to, and also that I had to, like, that I could let somebody else make the big decisions of my life for me, but I wasn't going to like where that ended up. That I got to decide, and that none of the options that I was choosing between, and this is always true, none of them were going to be perfect, but it was up to me which version of imperfection I wanted to live with.
Oh.
And so like, yeah, that day was a real life changer for me. I really thought that like life was one size fits all, and you just kind of follow the directions, you'd get there. But it's like, no, life isn't one size fits all. We get to make this look like us. We get to participate, and we do have to participate. We do have to participate. And so that was the real game changer for me. And I have that phrase, you get to decide. And also, life is not one size fits all. A beautiful life is not one size fits all. Those things have been like just touchstones for me throughout so many decisions. Every decision from like, how do we do dinner time with my toddlers right now? Well, like, you know what? You get to decide. There isn't actually one right way to feed your toddlers. It's just hard and messy, and they don't need anything. So like, good luck. But you get to decide how you do it. And you get to decide who you want to spend your life with. And you get to decide what you want to do for work. And you get to decide how to spend your money in a way that is in line with your wants and dreams and long-term goals and things that are important to you. Like, you get to decide. So that has, honestly, that phrase has changed my whole life.
It really is. And it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people can sometimes take on like a martyr syndrome, or like a sense of martyrdom, where they're like thinking it should be hard in a way. And you said something in the book, it was good things aren't always hard and hard things aren't always good. And I'm like, oh, like we don't get a badge or a trophy for trudging through stuff that we maybe actually can do something about. And it's like, there are so many people that just think that they have to do it a certain way, maybe because that was how it was done before them, or how they think it should be, or they listened to someone who was like, this is what you should do. And they're like, okay, I guess I should. And then they have this sense of like, almost like a victim mentality with it. Like, well, it's hard, but it's good. Therefore, I'm going to do it. So in all of your research for the book, years working with women on this topic, why do you think we make it so dang difficult to choose and curate and create a life that we really love? And like, why do we make it so hard sometimes to accept that we get to decide?
Oh, you know what? I think it is like, I think it's not our fault. Like, it's
there's just, layers.
Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, we are, I, the thing that I didn't know was, I didn't realize how in the water it is, to tell a woman how to live her life. Like, I just didn't realize how pervasive it is. I didn't realize how, deep those roots are historically.
Yeah.
And it is like, we're in this really unique place as women today, where in some ways we have more options available to us in, I would say in every way, we have more options available to us than any generation of women before us. Like, even my mom, one generation ago, did not have the options that I have. And so in a lot of ways, and like, we're very grateful for that. Also, it can sometimes feel like we're building the plane as we're flying it. Like, it's hard to get advice from women who have truly walked this road before us, because not that many have. But at the same time, we're sort of the engine, and we're also the caboose of the train. So we're the caboose in the fact that we are going after generations and generations and generations of women. And like, the pressure, the expectations that were put on them are still there for us. Like, it's the reason that it feels so, that like, it's still so hotly debated, and people still have such big feelings when a woman says she doesn't want to have kids. Like, that's not an acceptable option for so many of us in so many circles. Like, you can't say that out loud. It makes you sound like you hate puppies or something. Like, it's, yeah, you're like not allowed to say that, let alone choose that in some circles. And it's because that has been the expectation on women. That has been our role, our prescribed role. This is what you have to do to be a good woman for generations. And so it's really, if we're going to make a decision that's different from that, we're like, you know, walking with hundreds of years of historical precedent, like pulling at our ankles. The same is true for working. You know, it's only very recent that women could even have a career outside the home and have, like, I mean, there are still so many industries that are so male dominated. We still don't make as much as men. Like, it is to like, it feels this hard because it is this hard. And I think that that's just really important to know, is that it feels like we easily slip into these prescribed roles, and they're a little bit different for everybody, but we slip into them, one, because it's easier. You feel like you're more likely to be accepted and welcomed and to keep your place at the table and in your family, and to, you're going to ruffle fewer feathers, which feels like, safer. So that's one reason. But then also because like we're on a lazy river ride that's like not that lazy, that's been pushing us kind of in this one direction forever. And it takes a lot of effort to get off or to go, I don't have to sit in this darn tube. Like, everyone else is sitting in the tube. Everyone else has been sitting in the tube for generations. And so to get out of the water is like radical and revolutionary. And so that means it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had this conversation with my own mom multiple times too, because we hang out all the time and we're like, you know, best friends and all that jazz. And she'll come over to help me sometimes with the kids or help putting laundry away because she's a saint. And there've been times where I've been self-deprecating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Like,
yeah.
And I've been self-deprecating because of it, because I'm like, who am I? I am a 30-year-old grown up and my mom is coming over to help feed my family and like do my dishes. And she's been like, Erica, when I was your age, I didn't also have a job at the same time as raising my children. Like, our generation is the first in many ways to kind of have both of these things held at the same level and wear so many hats. And we put the pressure on ourselves to A, get the hats in the first place, but then we put more pressure on ourselves to wear all of the hats at the same time and wear them well. And then we're like shocked and surprised and upset with ourselves when we actually need some help in a village to support us in all of this.
Yes.
So like, bless
her.
And
your mom's she's like, well, I may not have been working, but also I would have loved to have my mom come over and put my laundry away because I was super overwhelmed. Like,
she has said that so many times to me too, that exact same thing. And when she was getting to choose schooling, she's told me multiple times, she was like, my options were be a teacher or be a nurse, because that's what our family could afford. And that was the option. Do you want to be a teacher or do you want to be a nurse? End of your dreaming, planning, etc. So when she's an awesome nurse, but like, she's also brilliantly creative and she helps me with the creative side of my business stuff. And she does photography for me. And every time I'm like, mom, like, switch careers, switch, come over to the dark side here and be creative with me because you're so good at it. But she's so ingrained in like, this is what all of her stuff was. I'm like, man, I wish she had had the options that I had now, because how different that could have been for her. But then at the same point, I'm like, man, I'm also so grateful that she gives me that grace and can speak that truth in life over me to come and then help me with all the things. Cause I'm like, it's such a generational thing. And then my hope now is like, our daughters are going to see how we're handling everything. And then it's going to be a totally different world by the time they're at the age where they're now approaching their everything era and about to make all of these massively huge decisions. So I'm with you. I think it's so important to point out like the process of creating a life you love. There are things that will feel hard and there are things that will still be hard. And you're not just going to like hit this magical thing, this imaginary finish line where you're like, well, once we achieve this, or like, if we get there, then all of a sudden it will be smooth sailing and it will click and it will feel right and it will be wonderful. It's like, sorry, sis, it's still going to be hard.
I think it's like, so I saw this thing. I need to like talk to her. I'm like, who is this girl? There's this reel that's been going around, and it's this girl talking about how she heard a story one time about a girl who climbed a mountain and like pooped her pants on the way up and lost all her stuff. And like, I'm kind of making it up because I can't remember, but like nearly died along the way up, like spent all her money doing it, hated the experience, and realized when she got to the top that she only did it to please another person. And so she goes, now I think of that all the time before I commit to something, like, is this a mountain I want to climb? And like that is what this book is all about. We're not talking about like an easy button. We're not talking about a like three steps to a life that's like sugary, sweet, and happy all the time. Like it's not that. It's we're talking about mountain climbing here. We're talking about pursuing a really important, worthwhile, beautiful, full life. We're just saying, let's just not climb the wrong mountain because someone told you you had to. Like, make sure if you're going to poop your pants and like nearly die and like lose all your money and stuff like that, that you're doing it for a cause you actually want to pursue. So yeah, it's not easy, but it's worth it. But only if we've really made sure we're walking towards the right destination.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure we're probably all familiar with that feeling of friends or family giving their unsolicited, but maybe well-intentioned 2 cents. But the thing is that their idea of what is best is probably looking a lot like decisions that they made or decisions that they wanted to make along the way and maybe wished they had done differently in retrospect. So let's talk navigating the opinions from outsiders and kind of maybe we already know, okay, ignore most of them, especially if they're outsiders, but I think we can all probably resonate with it still feeling hard to discern what to take and accept and listen to and like take into thoughtful consideration versus kind of politely pass on altogether from the people who are like the insider outsiders in our lives where they know us, they've seen us grow up. When they say, I know you, you're like, oh, you're right. 'Cause you do. But also I know myself. And kind of like how to have that conversation with them when you're respecting the relationship, but you are kind of holding a boundary and like not offending, but you're also not like preoccupying on how they react to the boundaries and like that dynamic, because ooh, that's a jazzy one.
It is. Yes, it is. And like, I feel like there are so many times in my life where I've been so seriously influenced by someone who was on the outside, like someone who has no business speaking into my life. And why in the world would I listen to them? I don't know anything about them, but like, I don't know. I'm spongy. And maybe like I told you, I'm a people pleaser. I'm like, you know, I just
like, maybe you do know best.
Maybe
thank
you do.
Sally, like, from the hair salon. Like, sure.
Seriously. it's, like, and maybe other people are different, you know, maybe other people hear something and immediately are like, I don't know. I think I am more like that now, but for a long time, you know, if someone would say something, I would be like, that seems like a valid perspective. And it wouldn't even enter my conscious mind. I wouldn't even really chew it over. It was more like it sort of slipped in the back. And then I would realize like a couple years later that it was still there. But with family members who are like in, but like not super in, I think before we even talk about how to have that conversation with them, one of the things I talk about in the book is how to assemble your cabinet. And I call it a cabinet because I'm kind of a West Wing nerd. I love the West Wing. And the cabinet is like the group of advisors that advises the president. And I think there are 15, and they're all the experts in their little pocket, their little sphere. And I love the expectation that sets. And that is that the president isn't supposed to know everything about transportation and labor and state and the interior and like all these different things. The president can't possibly know everything. One person cannot possibly know everything. And so they have people in their corner who know more than they do in that area to like guide them. And so assembling our cabinet, I think, is a really, really important first step. Decide like taking an inventory of who's in your life, kind of paying attention to which of your friends, which of your family members really like knows what they're talking about in a certain area, guides you really well, knows where you want to go and is pointing you in that direction, not in the direction they want you to go. And kind of paying attention, like maybe making even a list of like, these are the voices I listen to. I think when we do that, it is so much easier to then like anyone who's not on that list is not on that list. And so I think it's so much easier to like disregard their opinion because they're not in your inner circle. They're not in your cabinet. But when you're at dinner, man, I'm like, my grandmother was so smart and funny and strong. And I remember like my aunts would always try to, and my mom too, would always try to like get in her business and like, Mom, you should do this. You should do this. And my Grammy was like, maybe a little passive aggressive about it, but mostly just kind of passive, like stubborn about it, where she would go like, uh-huh, okay. And I was like, she's not going to do it. She's absolutely not going to do that thing. And I think that that's like, we can kind of borrow a version of that where we can say, oh, that's such an interesting idea. Or like, good point. Or I hadn't thought of that. Or, oh, thanks for your input. Or something like that. Just because someone says something to us doesn't mean we have to implement it. And so I think then we get to decide what to do with what they said. But we don't necessarily in the moment need to go, well, Aunt Sharon, I am not going to parent my kids like that. And here's why. Like, because that may not be the best thing for the relationship. It may not be necessary. We're not going to change her mind, but she also doesn't have to change ours. So I think we can just sort of like nod and smile and say thank you for your thoughts and your insight, and then ask for the potatoes. Like, that's honestly what I would do.
Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page about other people's opinions, because that's, I think sometimes it just helps to have that reminder that like, just because they said it doesn't mean you have to take it. You can just kind of like hold it loosely and like pass it to your left, so to speak, with the metaphor here. Those people's opinions aside, I feel like a lot of us, especially Christian women, we care about another very big opinion, God's opinion. Because I think we care, and rightfully so, about God's plan for our lives. And I'm sure a lot of us are probably like, yep, have had that thought before where we're like, okay, God, like, what is your plan for my life? Show me the way. And I'm with you in that I don't think there's like one specific path that God has perfectly planned and laid out just for you that you have to like figure out on this big journey of discernment where you're like, what is my one way? And then if you veer off the path, you've like forever ruined your life and you're done. I wrote down something you said in the book because I read it and I was like, yes, we are same brain here. God taking care of us does not mean he's going to wrap us in bubble wrap. God loves you and is with you, and you can still get your heart broken. Both can be true. I was like, can I get an amen? Because there is so much truth and wisdom in that, that like, just because you are a believer and you believe there's this higher power that has intends for your ultimate good and probably has given you specific gifts for a specific reason and maybe a calling on your heart, whatever have you, you can still have hardship along the way. And not even can, you will. We're literally promised it in the Bible. Like, there, it's still going to be hard, and that doesn't mean that it's wrong, and that doesn't mean that God doesn't care. It doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It just means that, like, welcome to life. So can you kind of talk to us about the authority that we have and the peace in that, in like accepting that power to make those decisions, to know that like God is not mad at you. You're not messing it up. You're not like ruining his plan for your life. You can in fact make decisions and know that like it can very well be in the same, in line with God's intention for your life.
Yes. I'm so glad that you brought this up. Something that I've found is that there are a lot of women who are uncomfortable with the idea of creating a life they love. And mostly like mostly women in the church. And I think it's because our fear is that we are either creating a life we love or creating a life that God loves. And obviously we want to follow God's plans for our life. We want to honor him with our life. We also don't want to like go off roading and step out from under his protection, you know, because it feels like if we're following his plan, that's like an insurance policy. And we just don't like, you can drive without insurance, but that's a like dice roll we don't want to do. But the thing that I've found is that one, I do think that God has like intentions for our life, or maybe even specific plans, or I don't know, like, I'm not God. I don't know how it works that we have free will, but also he knows how everything's going to turn out. And like, I just don't know. That is beyond my pay grade. They don't pay me that much. But I also really, I've never known God to be like a puppeteer or like a super controlling dad or father. Like, I've always known him to be a really loving dad. And sometimes it feels easier, the idea of him being like, okay, take one step forward. Okay, one to the left. Okay, one step forward, one to the right. Like, to really orchestrate our steps like that. But that's just never how God's worked with me. Like, he'll guide me. But generally, he's like, kiddo, which college do you want to go to? You can go to either. Like, I'll be with you. I'll be with you either way. I feel like he didn't. Again, I don't totally know how this works, but I don't feel like he forced me to marry my husband. Like, I feel like I got to choose him and he got to choose me. And our love is so much better because it was chosen, not forced. I don't feel like God said, you have to have kids. He absolutely was. I mean, it was his miracle that, you know, is why I have my twins. So he was absolutely part of it. But I don't feel like he was like, you have to do this, otherwise you're going to step outside my love. I feel like instead he empowers us, he emboldens us. He is walking next to us and behind us and kind of shoving us along a little bit. But I don't feel like he's this puppeteer guiding every single one of our steps. And so therefore we have authority. Like, we have decisions that we need to make about our lives. Do I want to turn left or do I want to turn right? Okay, God's going to be with you either way. They're both good options. Which do you want to do? And like, that's what we're talking about with this book, not stepping outside of God's plans for our lives, but like participating in them. That's the thing. We're not stepping out of the plans. We're participating in them. We're doing our part.
Ooh, that's so good. I feel like that needs to be highlighted, underlined, and then like repeated back for everybody, because it's not like we're not talking like, okay, a bad decision and a good decision, which one are we going for? We're talking like, you've got multiple decisions in front of you. All of them could be okay. This is like, it reminds me of like the Scantron tests from back in the day, where you're like, this is a multiple choice, but multiple answers could be correct. And you're like choosing, is it A, is it B, is it A and B, A, B, and sometimes C on a Thursday. Like, there could be multiple right choices ahead of you, and you're not going to be loved any less regardless. And you're probably not going to mess anything up by choosing one over the other. And you can still get to where you eventually will be going. And I think this is a key too, that people forget, like, God will use you in any of those scenarios. And I think that is sometimes maybe the point that gets missed, is like, I think he cares more in his character and in his heart about us being willing to be used for his greater good and glory along the way. Not necessarily like, are you the doctor or are you the teacher? But it's kind of like the further step of like, what are you doing in that role to help people? And how are you living your day-to-day life? And how are you carrying yourself and treating others and all of these other things that would be that way, regardless of what your resume says, or like, regardless of what your marital status is. Like, and that's just kind of something that we can forget when we're in the height of our everything era and all of those jobs and roles and titles and whatever feels very important and very serious and big. And it is in some ways, but then in other ways, it's like, it's easy to get lost in those weeds and forget that, like, at the very end of the day, like the end, they will matter significantly less than we think they do when we are like in that moment.
Yes. And like, you know, I'm thinking about like being a doctor or teacher, and that we, like, we're asking God, like, what do you want for me? What do you want me to do? And like, sometimes I think we feel like, well, if I want to be a doctor, but I don't want to be a teacher, maybe God's going to ask me to be a teacher because he's going to like push me like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, sometimes, but like not as a rule, and like not always. I think it matters. It matters. Like, are you good with science? Like, that is, are you naturally inclined to be like, are you good at science? Are you interested in it? Can you do blood? Are you going to pass out?
Hard, like, pass.
Seriously, I know all those things, like, they deeply matter for you. You have to care about something in order for you to put the time and energy into actually being good at it. Like, same with being a teacher. Do you like kids? If you don't, please don't be a teacher. Like, if you do, for the love, please be a teacher. Like, both are needed. We need doctors. We need teachers. If you find that your like insides are reading about childhood development, like, are like your staying up late because you don't want to finish the, like, you don't want to stop reading, and you're reading about childhood development, or you're reading about this latest surgical technique or something, like, kiddo, that's your thing. Like, that is what you are good enough at and interested enough to pursue long enough that you will be good at it. Like, that's not taking you away from who God created you to be. That's taking you into it.
It's leaning into it. Exactly. Because he put that desire and that intention there in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. Okay. So if the excuses are gone then, and we're like, okay, we can have confidence in this and move forward accordingly. Let's talk practicals. I know that this is, there's like an entire part of all of this in your book. So everyone should pick that up immediately for like the full know-how. But for some cliff notes that our friends can start with, like right now, hearing you get to decide can feel, I think, equal parts empowering, but also overwhelming. So people might be panicking at this point where they're like, okay, like I have permission, but now I'm like panicking. Mm-hmm. What are the maybe like most important practical next steps that she can take today to make some sort of meaningful, significant step forward in creating a life that she loves?
I love that. I love that. It's such a good question. So super high level, and I hate talking about it like this because I'm like, okay, but there's so much. Like there's so much.
Like get the book because there's more, but like there's more. High level because you're driving and like you're not reading a book while you're driving.
Yes, 100%. One really important first step is to really identify what voices you're listening to. Like, what do you think before you can figure out what you want to do with your life? I feel like you need to figure out what you feel like you're supposed to want to do. I have a whole exercise in the book where we talk about that. And once you kind of identify, this is what I think I'm supposed to do, and I'll help you with that because it's hard to identify. Like, that's a hard thing to spot. It's like become part of the furniture in your house. Like, you just don't even see it anymore. It's been there for so long. So I'll help you identify that. Then we talk about like, who told you it had to be that way? And is that someone that you trust to guide you with your whole life? We've kind of talked about that. And are they right? But then knowing that we like, now that we've sort of identified some of those supposed to's, now what? And the now what is we need to like get inspired. We need to start gathering some options. And I like that this is the next step instead of we'll decide something, because it's like, well, we're not ready yet. Like, don't push me. So for the get inspired section, we have look outside and look inside. And I think, you know, look inside is like a real reflection of like, who do you want to be when you're at the, like at the end of the end of the end of the day? There are a bunch of exercises in there to kind of help you identify some through lines in your life. But I want to talk about the look outside because it can be tempting to want to like put horse blinders on for the way everyone else is living their lives, because it is really, I feel like, you know, we're all really prone to comparison, but there's something really beautiful that happens when we can start looking at other people's lives as like ideas and inspiration. Like, wow, I didn't realize that you could do this. I just was talking to someone like truly an hour ago, and she was like, you did a TED Talk. Interesting. TED Talk. That's something. And I could see this like seed planted in her head, and it started to grow. And I can look back at all of my best decisions and see like where that moment was. And it was always talking with a friend, or, you know, seeing a movie about, you know, documentary about someone's life, or seeing like, this is random, but I really love interior design. And so I love watching shows about people making houses out of things that like weren't houses before, like retrofitting, like a fire station or like a greenhouse, or like just people living in different ways in their space reminds me that there's not one way to live in a house. You don't have to live in a house. You can live in all kinds of things. And also there's not one right way to do other things either. And the more I can sort of expand my brain beyond the, you know, four walls, white picket fence kind of idea, the more creative I can get. And so that would be like a really good place to start. And I like that place instead of make a decision today, because that's really overwhelming. You don't have to make a decision yet, but maybe start gathering some inspiration about not even what you're going to do, but what other people are doing, what some options are. And then that kind of like gets your creative juices flowing a little bit and expands your horizons. And I think allows you to have the freedom to think up outside the box and actually come up with a decision that really works for your family. Cause it may not, there may not be a good fit within those four walls. You may need to bust out a little bit first.
I love that too, though, because there's a vetting process involved to kind of check your heart throughout, because it allows you to, because as you're saying, like, look at what other people are doing too. It's like people might automatically slip into comparison if you're in a negative headspace or just like not ready for that step yet, where you start looking and you're like, oh, she did it, therefore I want to do it because she did it, instead of I want to do it because I should do it because that's a great next step for me on my journey. And those are two very different, distinct headspaces.
Yes.
Where you can almost check like how ready you are, because if you're looking at it and you're feeling antsy and agitated because you're filling your head with shoulds and you're like, ah, she did it, so I should. And it has any sort of connection to that other person personally, wrong, not doing it. That's not where you should be at. Yes. But if you can look at it and be like, what cool inspiration, like I never would have thought to do it that way, or that could work for my life in this way, or same but different, then you're like, all right, pulse check. That's like a good, healthy way to get inspiration, where it's not coming at it from a competitive or comparative spirit, but it's coming at it from a really healthy place of like broadening your horizons, getting creative, like Pinteresting for the sake of what Pinteresting used to be in terms of like getting inspiration and not seeing like, but who did it and why, and like, how do we measure up to each other? But like, oh, imagine the possibilities.
I think that's why I'm glad you said that, because I didn't realize that's, I think, why I like shows about retrofitted firehouses, because I'm not looking at girls who are exactly like me in my same stage of life, like that I could compare or compete with in other parts of my life. Like I'm looking at one family who really has nothing to do with me, that I don't know. I don't know the inside of their life. I just get to see the way that they put their house together. And I think that that's really beautiful. Like if we can, it like, be careful with where you're looking. There's so many accounts that I don't follow, or like magazines I don't read, shows I don't watch and stuff, because it makes me feel small. But things like seeing people live in different creative ways. Like one random example is like, I know that I haven't watched it yet, but there's that show, there's that documentary on Netflix about the Blue Zones. And it's like people who live in different places. And
my mom has seen it. I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard, she has said it's like fascinating.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way that maybe you're not looking at people like, I would say Instagram might not be the place to look for inspiration, but like books or documentaries, or how people do things in different parts of the world. Like that's a really, like really expand your horizons. See that it's bigger than just what you and, you know, these five influencers on Instagram are doing. You know, there's just a whole bunch of different ways to live a life. And I think that's a really beautiful place to start, but I'm glad you said that. Yeah, we need no more comparison in our lives.
A freaking man. Oh my gosh. Okay, Steph, and getting things wrapped up, I want to ask you what we ask everybody to end the show, which is kind of exciting. I'm really excited to hear your answer here. What does thrive mean to you? And how do you strive to thrive in just your everyday life?
So what I think thrive should mean to me is that I have my day like sectioned out like an equally divided pie. And I have like my exercise pie, and I have my like devotional slice of the pie, and I have my friendship slice of the pie, and work slice of the pie, and, you know, being just this rock star mom slice of the pie. And it's all like even, like there's just time for everything and enough time for everything. And I do all the things in one day. That's the pressure I feel. That's what I feel like thriving should look like. And that's the definition. That's the should I feel. What I think it actually looks like for me is going really hard, like fully diving in to different things on different days. Like currently in this moment, I'm not my best mom self. Like I have a book coming out on Tuesday. I am so in work mode that like everything else has taken a back seat. My kids are fed and loved and taken care of. Like they are unbathed, all the things. But like, my brain space isn't like my extra brain space isn't going to like, you know, creating really fun activities for them or anything like that. We're just sort of, I think that there, you can only be growing in different areas of your, like in so many areas of your life, everything else has to be maintained. And so I feel like my kids, my house, my, I don't know, like my email, like all kinds of things are really in maintenance mode while I pour my heart and my focus into this book. But I can do that knowing that it'll shift. And then like, it absolutely will shift. And so soon, like we'll be really focused on our family and this transition and, you know, getting our house in order. And like, they're just, I think it's time for all kinds of different things. I used to feel like in order to be a balanced, thriving person, it all had to happen within one day. And now I'm realizing like, it can happen like a day a week, or even a week a month, or even a month a year. Like the idea that every single important thing has to happen a little bit every day, I think just doesn't actually get me as far as I want to get. It's better. My brain works better when I really focus on kind of one thing at a time. So sometimes that means like working a lot. Sometimes that means working not at all. But that really works for me. So thriving, I think, is knowing kind of what this season is about, this or this moment in time is about, and letting it be about that, knowing that there will be time for the other things later.
I love that so much. And also it just clicked for me too, because I think you're onto something on like a deeper psychological level here for this definition. Because if we think of babies developing, like milestone wise, I remember hearing this when my daughter was a baby first, they were always like, you expect things to move one at a time. Like if they just hit some huge milestone developmentally, physically, you probably won't see like a speech milestone or like another huge milestone happening at the same time, because their little body is solely, and their brain is solely focused on that one thing. And I'm like, wow, what a cool parallel all the way to us as grownups. We're like, we see this with literal babies when they're like, okay, don't get too excited on all the milestones. Like it is okay and completely normal if one thing is rearing full steam ahead and other things seem to be taking a back seat. It's not that they're behind. It's not that there's anything wrong. It's just that is the entire focus and energy at this point in time. And it will all even out in the end, and it will all be okay. So
yes,
amen to that.
I love that. That's such a great parallel. I love that.
Right? Oh, cool. So on that note, tell everybody where they can find you online to connect with you more. And of course, to pick up a copy of your book, which we will have linked in the show notes, obviously, but give them all the places anyway.
Thank you. Well, so my book, This Is Crazy, is available anywhere books are sold. Whoa, that's wild.
So cool.
And my little corner of the internet is stephaniemaywilson.com. That's where you can find all my things. My Instagram is smaywilson. It's M-A-Y. My podcast is Girls Night, and it is such a fun community of women. And we have so many fun topics. I just love getting to do that. But all of it's linked through my website, stephaniemaywilson.com.
Wait, before you go, make sure you're subscribed to never miss an episode of Thrive. Drop 5 stars on your way out if you like what you just listened to. And come join the party on Instagram at thrive.podcast to stay inspired and thriving all week long. Thanks for tuning in. It's your time to thrive.